Brian James Lindsay.
What's up, guys?
Hey, do you have, I know we're knocking on the door July, so it's Christmas in July here at the A Couple of Nobody's podcast.
All right.
Do you have a favorite Christmas artist that you love to listen to? Go-to Christmas artist.
Probably Harry Connick.
Oh, like Harry Connick. Okay. Yeah,
probably Harry Connick Jr. Like, I love Harry Connick Jr. Saw him live Fox Vapt down in Atlanta.
Oh, that'd be a good show.
It was. And they say that after his shows in Atlanta, he always finds like a dive bar somewhere and just goes and plays.
Does the bar have to have a piano? Like, you'd have to like qualify this.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's the places that have the organs and all that. I think he could play anything though.
Probably. Yeah.
I think he could go and sit in on what, just carry a trumpet in and jump in.
Today on the show,
do you have one?
Well, I'm getting there. But today on the show, I have it like in genres. So I've got classics. I got Dean and Frank, right, in the old school.
Okay.
I got Gen X, which is like Mariah.
NSYNC or something? Is that what
No, they did do some Christmas, like Holiday.
Kelly Clarkson.
Well, that's next level. And okay. Then I got like my singer songwriter kind of vibe on Christmas, like dinner Christmas. And the dude on the show today fits that bill, Dave Barnes, one of my favorite.
Roasting on an open pie.
There it is. Yeah.
You know what's weird? No lie. I've been working on Christmas songs today.
Fantastic.
True story. Yep.
You got two Christmas shows coming up at the end of the year, right? You get new Christmas. Yeah. Is this new Christmas music or this? You're just working on stuff that.
New stuff. I'm just piddling. I'm trying to figure out if I want to release Christmas songs this year, and so I was like spelunking. You know, my ideas and all that stuff to go, is there anything there? And there actually is. So now I got to figure out like what I'm going to do about that.
We could workshop that together. I think we could.
Okay. Like, I love that.
Yeah, for sure. We'll Let's just go ahead snow. And hash it out right now.
If you can rhyme snow, it's pretty much gold. You're a Christmas songwriter.
I took a songwriting class in college. A lady named Babby Mason taught this songwriting class, and she announced to everyone that Christmas songs are the hardest songs to write. Because it's all been written and everybody wants, like, it's so hard to say Merry Christmas in a new, authentic way.
Okay. So the guy across from us who's got 20 Christmas songs, is that true?
No, a lot more than that.
Yeah, more. Well, is it hard to write Christmas songs?
I don't think so. What am I trying to say? I think she's right. I think it is. It's tricky because how many ways can you say Merry Christmas or it's snowing or, you know, mistletoe? But I think people have such an insatiable love and desire to hear Christmas songs that if you can get decent new Christmas songs, they have a shot. Like, they really do. Like, because I think there is something that is like hardwired into humans. I would say especially Americans. That like you can just kind of never get too many Christmas songs. I really believe this. And I think the canon for them is so small that you hear the same ones over and over, so that when there's one that sort of gets into like the orbit a little bit, people are like, oh, what is that? And then it kind of becomes, so I do think it's hard. I think for the same reason it's hard, I also think it's fun in that you really do have a limited amount of words you can use in like a good way. Yeah. So I think some people be like, that sucks. I'm like, no, that's more fun because then it's like, you know, exactly. It's not, you know, like if I sat down to write any other kind of song today, that could be anything from like neo soul R&B to like a Beatles thing. And that's hard. That's hard. Cause you're like, well, okay. I don't know. I know I want to say this, but I could say that soulful. I could say that country. I could say that, you know, like hip hop. I could say that, you know, song, like singer, songwriter. I could say Christmas.
Yeah.
And so I think the great thing about Christmas is no, man, you got like two or three lanes.
Okay. Like, do you think it's easier to sell the Christmas songs, even though it's harder to write because like you're guaranteed an audience? Is it easier to market Christmas?
Oh, market Christmas. I think all of it. Yeah, I do.
Like that's a marketing thing that it's easier because everybody's just built in loving Christmas.
I tell you the other thing too that I did not see coming, which I'm so thankful for, is putting out those Christmas albums pretty early in my career was a huge. This is a weird thing to say as a songwriter. It was like a really great business move that I didn't mean to make because I think so many people are so intimidated by writing Christmas songs that when people kind of knew, like, oh man, Barnes writes songs, like he enjoys it. Like, I write so many Christmas songs for other people.
Yeah.
And I love it. Like, I genuinely handle the Bible. I still love it when somebody's like, hey, you want to write something for a Christmas thing? I'm like, yes. And I will have probably 5 ideas ready to go. Cause I'm just always kind of collecting Christmas stuff. Cause I know somebody's going to call and be like, hey dude, I need like a last minute Christmas song.
Yeah. And you don't cut, like, I mean, you do some of the traditional songs, but like, you take such a different lane and lens on Christmas with everything you do. So yeah. I would imagine there's just a, for you, which you seem like an idea guy, an abundance of like lanes to run in and tell the story differently.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, but again, y'all are right. And there really is a limited, there's a very limited. I tell people all the time, I think the reason I like writing Christmas songs is you know exactly the target. Mm-hmm. Like, it is there. There it is. It's this far away. And we're just shooting. It's, again, writing any other thing, you have 100 genre targets. You're like, well, I don't know. Do y'all want to do that one or that one? Or even inside of that one, there's 2 more inside of that. Yeah. And then that, it's like Russian Dolls, you know, where Christmas just kind of like, that's pretty much it. And you kind of know when you hit it or not. Like, you can write a song by yourself or with somebody else and really feel like, I think that was good. Nobody's like, yeah. Or like, nah, it's just not great.
So I got to ask, have you ever been challenged to put the Red Ryder BB gun into a song? I feel like that's this year's challenge.
That is the year.
I feel like the question I want to know is, when do you put up Christmas decorations? Because is it just the songwriting? Are you like a really a Christmas dude? Are you just like, you haven't even put had a tree in 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Scrooge, we don't celebrate it here.
And
we
don't just like selling these.
No,
songs.
I do love it. I will admit that I think doing it so much does sort of take a little bit of the appeal away from it, which is a real bummer because I used to just absolutely love it. And I still do. And the kids, you know, as y'all know, really help that. But yeah, it does. It's sort of like weird. And I think, too, I tend to work a good bit during December, you know, doing like private shows or Christmas stuff, which is great. But it really does, you know, that can really start to wear on sort of the feeling of it being this sort of like festive sort of thing. Because all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm like working a lot, you know, which is great. I'm super thankful for that. Anybody listening, let me know if you need a private Dave Barnes Christmas show. but that said, it is like, it is,
booking.
It does take a little bit of the magic away from it. Yeah.
Okay.
So you said that you always get 5 ideas for Christmas songs. Are you just an idea guy? Is that just sort of the character of who you are? You always got ideas, or is it just music, or is there multiple ideas that maybe Dave hasn't done yet?
No, I mean, I like to think I'm an idea guy. It's harder the longer you write songs to have ideas all the time. I think that's probably the majority of the work now is like actually having stuff you want to say when you've said so much already. Christmas is different because I have a discipline that I've done for probably a decade now where in December I try to only write Christmas songs and or come up with Christmas ideas because it's just a little more osmotic and easy because it's in the air and it's cold and you're kind of feeling like right now. Today is hysterical because it's the hottest day of the year so far, and I'm in here trying to figure out, you know, what rhymes with family and December. But some of that discipline for me in December is knowing that in July somebody's going to text me and be like, hey, dude, I need a Christmas song. And I'm like, oh, I have 7 things I was messing with. Let me go pull those back up again. Or even just titles because I think, again, it's funny. I just think people are really intimidated with Christmas music. And so they just tend to be like, I don't know how to do it. And it's so funny because I just feel like once you sort of crack a little bit of the code, it's like, oh, yeah, you can say snow in every song. You can say, you know, mistletoe in every song. Nobody cares because I think the general public is like, no, you're working with a limited lexicon here. Nobody's expecting to have some super. I mean, when you think of the Joni Mitchell, river, you know, wish I had a river I could skate away.
That song.
That song is by far, I think, probably one of the most profound Christmas songs, but it's not really a Christmas song.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a song that's got the word Christmas in it, so it makes the canon. But I think, like, nobody, I don't think the population is sitting out there going, like, we need, like, a Leonard Cohen Hallelujah, but a Christmas song. Like, no, man. It's like people just, I feel like people are like, no, we know that's too hard. Don't do that. Just like, give us a fun little ditty, But something I feel like kind of heartfelt.
Hallelujah, like, became a Christmas song. Like, Pentatonix and some of these other people were like, let's make that Christmas. And, like, all of a sudden, on my Sirius XM, it's on all the time.
Yeah, I know, I know. It's, again, because I just don't think there's, it's really hard to get songs into that pantheon. And so I think people are always trying to see, like, hey, can we cheat it in there? Can we cheat the song in? Because it says, like, December or snow, you know?
Or it feels good listening when I'm cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Honestly, it just has, like, a Christmas feel, which what is, you know, there's like reindeer bell. I don't know.
Bells.
This song makes me want to put a hoodie on.
Yeah.
So let's go for it.
Is that a lot of hip hop?
I thought that was Seattle sound, the Seattle grunge rock.
I was gonna say or hip hop.
Yeah, both of those things.
All right, whatever, hip-hop. Guys. Yeah. I hate both of you. Yeah.
So
hope all your hoodies get holes in them. How about that?
They're more in vogue that way. They're more in trend that way.
Okay, but don't you think there's something about Christmas songs, though? When you start writing a Christmas song, you feel like you're competing with, like, White Christmas. Like, you feel
I really believe this. I honestly believe this. I think people want something else than that. I think they listen to most Christmas music because there's not other Christmas music to listen to. I really believe that.
Yeah.
And I think if you can write something I'm going to give you a crazy hot take. I think something that a lot of songwriters get wrong. I'll show you.
Hold, please.
All right. Live music with Dave Barnes. I'm stoked.
So what people, I think.
I didn't know this was part of the deal, but we're on.
The work that you have to do, in my opinion, if you're going to write Christmas songs, is you got to learn like a couple of jazz chords. Because what people don't want is like, it's Christmas once again. Christmas is so great. Is, you know,
I'm clipping that and I'm editing that to new music coming soon.
But what they do want is this. They want like a. If you can do that, you can write 150,000 Christmas songs.
Okay.
And so I think when people, because I think what you guys are inferring, and this is why I bring it up, is that I think people associate what you said so well, the Rat Pack music, as Christmas music.
Mm-hmm.
And so every now and then you'll have something that'll come through. But if you really clock songs that tend to be evergreens in the Christmas space, they sound old. Like, you think about Mariah Carey, you think about even the Ariana Grande tune, the Kelly Clarkson, all of them have that sort of throwback thing. It's really rare you have, like, a new, like that Bieber's, I know it's kind of a joke, but his is that. It's just a fun kind of whatever that.
The Mistletoe song or whatever?
Mistletoe, yeah. And then,
yeah.
Which is actually reggae, which is even funnier. But, like, if you think, there's a few that'll sneak through that are just good old pop songs, but I would argue what people want in some Pavlovian thing we all have is like, it needs to sound kind of like the 60s or 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can do that, people are like, yeah, just give me all of it you got. And so I think for me, that's why, like, I love jazz. And it's like the one place I get to go, oh, I can do some really trippy, cool chords and progressions I could never do in my normal music. But people want in Christmas music. So, and that ends my TED Talk.
Yeah, no, it's great. So does it translate to your other music? Like, so the sense of feeling nostalgic always shows through in Christmas music.
Yeah.
When you're writing, you're doing a lot of writing for Dave Barnes and for everybody else, is there an element of going, let's help this feel a little nostalgic so we connect to it emotionally?
I think sometimes it's whatever the room, whatever everybody wants, you know, because if it's like people are like, let's write a song about growing up in your hometown. Obviously, that's going to be nostalgic. But if it's a love song, it's kind of a different thing. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Do you think that there are a lot of other things that we treat like Christmas songs in our life? Like that there's a lot of stuff that it's like, nah, we can't do that. It's just too hard. It's nah, we can't do that. Like, we're sitting here for 25 minutes talking about Christmas songs. Oh, no, it's been done. Too many other people are good. And I'm like, oh, crap. Like, yeah, Dave Barnes is just like, I'm definitely writing a Christmas album. I'm going to go learn seven.
jazz
I got to learn the jazz chords first. But
Because
my only jazz chord is just adding a seventh to it.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly. I mean, you know, add a major seven and suddenly you're in Christmas
land.
And
suddenly,
that's it.
But I'm like, okay, what are the Christmas songs of of all of the things that I'm just like, oh no, I can't do that. That's too much.
That's I do think there is something that's pretty universal about like the get in for most things is the hardest part.
Mm.
You know, and then the like the ticket to ride is pretty expensive, but it's like once you're on the ride, you're kind of on the ride. And I think that's a pretty profound question because I do think there's something to, I know I struggle with where I'm like, God, that's expensive. And it's like, yeah, but man, if you'll just pay the entry fee, then you're like in. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I know, man, but like that entry fee is up there. And I do think there is something to the work of learning. It's a language, you know, it's like whatever that is, it's learning like, can I get around saying this? Can I have a 5-minute conversation? Can I have a 10-minute conversation? Once you can have a 10-minute conversation, you can pretty much, you kind of know how to speak it, you know?
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. man, getting to 10 minutes.
So what would that be for you? I know you've dabbled in comedy. Your Dadville's killing it. What would be something like you're going, that's in maybe an idea form, you're going, the buy-in is high, but I think I want to buy into that. Is there anything other than music for you?
Not right now. I mean, there's definitely, you know, as I'm getting older, I've just turned 48 this summer. I can definitely feel some like winds of change vocationally. Not that I'll ever stop doing music or I really think it'll always be my main thing, but I think, I don't know. I can just feel this sense of like, what else is there that mm-hmm. I could be spending time doing? From a vocational standpoint, I would say especially. I think it's tricky too. I don't know if you guys feel this way, but as I get older, I was having a conversation with a friend about this. It's really hard to divine the difference between wisdom you have and knowing yourself and seeing something and going, I just know me mm-hmm. and I'm not going to do that well. Or I'm going to get halfway through that and then throw the deuce because it's just too much. And then the other half going, well, hold on. That may be the reason you need to just do it,
right?
Is because, you know, you've never done it and you've always said you couldn't, but why can't you? And so I think that's what I'm trying to, you know, I can feel that in me because I've had a couple things come up where people have asked me about certain things and I've found myself going, yeah, I just know me. And I'd be really excited about the beginning of that. And then I'd lose interest halfway through. And so part of me is like, that's wisdom. Like, you know yourself, you know better than done that a few times, you don't want to do it again. And then there's another part of me that almost like the devil on the other shoulder is like, well, hold on. Maybe that's the whole reason you should do it. It's just to kind of power through, you know? So.
No, I turned 49 this summer and I think that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
Like midlife is this, like, I know what I've done and it's almost like, what am I going to do now that leaves something behind? Like a legacy building season of life that is a shift of like, I've done these things, but like I had a guy email me, so done ministry my whole life. And some guy like found my resume somewhere in some little town in Tennessee. And he's like, I think you'd be a great youth pastor for our church of 30. And I'm going, buddy, you don't know I'm 49 years old and that season is gone. Like some young man needs to do that because I've already done that. Now I'm onto something different. And so I think it's fitting sometimes this reflection of life to go, okay, so what am I going to do in the next season? And I think, in his late 40s, it shows a big time. I'm like, that is where I'm living.
Yeah.
So if there was something different for Dave and you were dreaming, what would it be?
I mean, there's a lot of things. I wonder if you guys feel this way, but I very much subscribe to the sort of the ideology of like that second mountain, you know, like falling upwards halftime. You know, strength to strength. There's a million books about this, but you know, that we kind of all get to this season of life. And it's usually around our ages where you're kind of like, okay, that was great. Or it was really hard, whatever, but I can feel that I'm in the valley between the next thing.
Yeah.
But the next thing needs to be benevolence. It can't be me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I feel that very acutely. And I think my vocation adds to the weight of that feeling because it's always been about me and selling me and getting people like me mm-hmm. and buy tickets and albums and, you know, have me write with them or whatever. And I love that. And I'm thankful for that, but I really don't enjoy it anymore. Like I genuinely, like I have so little interest in sort of the self promotion, aggrandizing thing. And so, you know, I'm like, what does it look like to actually use that energy to help other people in whatever context that looks like? Yeah. And so I think that's what I find myself thinking about. So, I mean, it's a lot of things. It's like, I was thinking the other day how much fun it would be to kind of help A&R more artist projects, you know, just because it's something I love doing. But, you know, it's just a lot of prayer. It's a ton of prayer right now. Just like, Lord, because of literally what we talked about before this, like, I'm so excitable. I'm the first guy to be like, that sounds amazing. Let's do that. And then I'm also the very next person to say, but nah, it's never mind. That was fun to think about, but I don't want to do it anymore.
My head.
And so I think, you know, just kind of in a season of praying that whatever those things are, I kind of know they're from the Lord and they aren't self-generated.
So I'm playing games in my head because we talked to a friend a couple weeks ago about Enneagram types. So I'm going, what is Dave's Enneagram? Because I feel like it may be a
so
seven.
Obvious. Oh, yeah. Seven with seven wings, I think.
Seven wings.
Yeah.
So all in on the adventure.
All in. In the ideation. Like, yeah. I love, like, if you guys sat with me today and said, we want to spend 30 minutes, like, we have this idea for this thing. Like, I love that. But I do not enjoy the building. I'm not the builder.
Yeah.
You know, like, that to me is really exhausting.
So I'm in Clifton Strengths, I'm ideation, and that's me too. 100 ideas. Like, I could.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But to build it, no. That's somebody else's job.
Yeah.
I need that's friends no for
fun.
That.
Zero fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, y'all, I also know my energy is really different these days. You know, it's like, and it's not like I'm dying tomorrow, but I just know better than to be like, oh, my life doesn't have space for that.
Right.
It just doesn't. Or I just don't have the energy. I'm not going to, after the kids go to bed, want to spend another 2 hours working on that.
Right.
I'm like, nah, I'm going to want to go to bed, you know? Right. So I think to being wise enough to sort of know those things and what commitment of my energy and talent and time is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is wisdom around that where there wasn't, I think, you know, for a long time.
Do you think the people who will climb that second mountain or who will do the thing, the next thing, really, like, risk it? Is it people that have, like, an extreme amount of belief in themselves? Or is it people who are just, like, not afraid of risk? Like, they're just not afraid to lose? Like, is it that they just got so much confidence? I know I'm going to kill it. Or is it just like, why wouldn't? I mean, yeah, who cares? Like, yeah, I don't. Yeah, let's risk it.
I think that's I love that question. I think it's, I don't know. My suspicion is that, and this is what a lot of these books say, is you've kind of done, the first mountain was that thing. It was like, this is what I want to do. And you go out and you do it. You have some wins. You have some losses. But ultimately, it's Solomon's quest of realizing, like, that just didn't really do it. You know, be it was the biggest win I ever had, and I sold the company for $1 billion, or I built this thing and it didn't work. But still, I can sort of feel that thing of, like, okay, I just don't. That was fun. I don't want to do that again. And so I think it's a little bit of, like, coming to a season where you're not scratching the itch anymore. And so there's a new itch.
Yeah.
And I really believe, not just from a gospel angle, but I think just a humanity angle, there's something compelling about the service part, the benevolence piece that animates and energizes in a way that is really overwhelming. You know, because it's kind of like, I've done the thing, that was great, and I'm probably still going to do it, but I want it to be more others-centric, you know, and I think that becomes a real gasoline for that second mountain adventure that's not so me-centric and what's my next company I'm building to sell to make even more money or to, I think the excitement of how God made us to be really puts the wind in the sails of that second mountain. That's what I think. I don't know yet. I'm still merely in the valley staring up at that mother. But but I think the books that I've read tends to be that's kind of the thesis statements of those books is kind of like, if you'll let it. And I think what you're inferring with that question too is I do think you have to choose to do that, because I think a lot of, I only know men because I'm one, but I think a lot of men kind of go, that's risky because it's not about me and it's about other people. And that's a little weird. Mm. And, or, I'm already doing this and it's not really fun anymore, but it really works and I'm making great money.
Yeah.
Or I just know I'm in control of it. I know what it's going to do. So
yeah, I'll do good if I.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'll be fine
if I do another Christmas album, I know.
Yeah.
It'll kill.
Yeah. You know, Jeff's going to listen.
I know.
Jeff's going to
get that core audience. It's not a risk
on that one.
Let's just do another. Let's just sit around July and write Christmas songs.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things that's so y'all aren't asking this, but it is something I find myself thinking about is. I think that's one of the hardest things about being a 48-year-old singer-songwriter is I just have so much more music I want to make, but, you know, it's a little different. It's a little more adventurous. It's more chords. It's different, you know, sort of genres and things. Right. And so at some point, I do have to sort of square up with that and go, like, I want to do new and different stuff, but I don't know if that's what people want. And then there is a wisdom to knowing you're running this company that has a certain clientele that you're like, well, I mean, we've sort of always served burgers and people are going to be pissed if I start bringing out tacos, you know, and everybody's like, hey, it's not that we don't like tacos, but we sort of came today because we were hungry for burgers. You know? Or can you sort of like a burger taco fooled you? So it's like that's what I think is really, I told a really good friend of mine this morning, I thought this was a funny analogy. I thought of this as I was sort of walking and praying this morning, but it's like, I think as a 48-year-old singer songwriter that's still continually writing a lot of music, it's kind of like, it sort of feels like if the people who listen to me are the people that come to my restaurant, right? It's like I'm bringing them their 12th side at this point, and they're just kind of like, oh man, you know, like we were actually full 7 sides ago, but I just love making food, so I keep bringing it out. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, I know. But these fries, so these are, check it out. These are actually feta cheese and cumin. And they're like, brother, man, I'm sure they are great. We are absolutely stuffed. And so I think there's something tricky to that as a singer-songwriter. I do feel that very acutely, this feeling of like, I just want to keep bringing y'all food. And people are like, hey, listen. We love your food. That's why we're sitting here in your restaurant. But like we are extremely full.
You mentioned books. I just finished your buddy John Acuff's Procrastination Proof. I don't know if you've read it through yet. But he talks about risk tolerance. And so we've had a couple conversations with artists who are trying to make it in Nashville who are like 19 or whatever. They've got nothing to lose.
Oh, nothing.
Like this one, Kylie Small was her name. She's at Belmont. She can go home to Big Pop and Honey in Louisiana and be just fine, right? She got nothing to lose, but at our age, the risk tolerance is way higher. There's a mortgage, there's kids depending on us. So the wisdom in taking the leap, and Brian and I have been talking about this because things we're doing and things we're pursuing or maybe want to pursue or trying to hear from God on in the same way, like our risk tolerance feels a lot less. Mm. So we can't just pack it up and move to Nashville and chase a dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time,
I don't know if I buy it. I know we're supposed to be like, but
you're a missionary.
No, but here's the thing. I think I have this core imprinted memory.
Okay.
When I was like, I don't know, middle school. I can't remember, maybe 6th grade or something. And we had to drive to go to this school, and there was a baseball team that I didn't make. But I was the only person who could take this other kid. And so they let me be on the team because he was great. And I was his ride. Right. And I was really kind of too young. So we're on this baseball team and he's a star player. He's fantastic. And he's a good friend for me. And I just get to be on the team. Last game of the season. It's like championship game. I sat on the bench the whole time, but whatever the rules were, everybody has to have a turn. And so it's like bottom of the ninth, bases are loaded, and I have to go to bat.
Okay.
And I don't want to be there. I just want to be on the team. I don't want to be at the plate, but they're making me. And I look down third baseline, and the coach all season has given me the same signal, which is just two arms crossed.
Take.
Like, don't, and that means don't swing.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't swing. And so I was like, okay. So, man, they throw strike. And I was like, okay. And I look back, and he's like, don't swing. And I was like, okay. And another strike. So now I got 2 strikes, no balls, bases loaded, bottom of the ninth. Like, we need this hit. to win, and I've just took two strikes. And then I'm standing outside the box, and he gives me the signal with the other hand. It's a swing. And I looked at him, and I shook my head no. And I was like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not swinging. And everybody's just standing there watching. I was like, I'm not swinging. All season long, you told me not to swing. I've never swung all season. Now you're saying swing. And then now he's doing it work, like swing. And I was like, uh-uh. And then the ump's like, you got to get in. And I was like, no, this is not fair. If we were going to let me swing, we should have given me three shots at this thing. This is not okay. This is child endangerment or something. I don't know. It's a problem. And so I get up there and like, I swing and obviously miss, and we lose the game.
Oh.
And I remember my friends crying in the dugout.
Of course.
I remember the coach circling us up after, talking about how proud they were. And I was just thinking back to like, this was your bad, coach. You did this because you made me watch two pitches go by. And as I got older, there is a thing to my life that it's like playing not to lose guarantees a loss.
Right. Yeah.
And at 42 or 47 or 48, I'm like, I can't do that. But listen, you and your family can be fine in a single wide trailer.
That's true.
You can be so happy. You don't have to be off 12th Street or whatever. Yeah. You don't have to have nice cars. You don't have to have this. And it may impact your kids even more watching dad chase a dream instead of dry up on the vine and some job he hates.
Yeah.
Right.
But we've been told, listen, that's really risky. And it is risky for the people who are terrified of risk. But you talk to somebody who's not terrified of risk, and they're like, yo, it seems like opportunity. Seems like a good thing, Dave. Do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, write that crazy jazz album, because I bet your audience is aged with you, and we're ready to see what else you can do. Yeah. So let's...
I love that thought. I think it's true. I think for me, in the next season, if I felt that, it would really need to not be a lot about me.
Mm.
You know, I think if it was another adventure for Dave to like, you know, sort of feel better about himself or to try to rejuvenate something in me that I've gotten insecure about, that I don't love that. I think I'd be very cautious of that energy. Like, babe, you know what we're going to do? Instead of, you know, paying for private school next year, we're going to pull him out and I'm gonna make this crazy album. I'd be like, now, if you can tell me how you feel like God is telling me to do that and there's a benevolence piece to it, I'm a little more interested in that. But I do think the wisdom as we grow older, for me at least, is there's a really different thing to being called into something. And what God wants you in that thing, that I think you're exactly right, you know, where he's going, hey, swing, keep swinging, keep swinging, keep swinging. And then my ego, my pride, my insecurity sort of dreaming up things to make me feel better. Because I don't, and you know, there's a really fascinating, I heard this guy teaching on this not long ago, but just this idea that like, what are the things that God's kind of like, hey, I never called you to be there. If you're sitting there mad at me, it's kind of like it's like you and your coach. It's kind of like, well, you told, you know, don't put this on me, man. Like I told you to swing the whole time. You know, it's like, it would almost be like that, where I feel like, I heard this guy teaching on that. He's like, you know, he looks at some of the seasons of his life where he was a missionary, where they didn't go well. And one of them, the Lord specifically said, hey, I never asked you to come here.
Mm.
And he was like, oh. And so I think that is wisdom. So I think there is a piece that's like, what does adventure look like? What does risk look like? What are the things that God's calling us to? But I also think just as potent is being careful of this sort of like, I'm bored or I need something new and I'm just making this up for me. Yeah. And I'm putting my whole family at risk because of my inability to sort of maintain or to, you know, stay the course in a really boring, hard season.
Yeah. And we got good wives who cheer us on. So where's Annie at with you in that? Like if you go to Annie and go, I feel like I'm moving this direction, and it's maybe low risk, maybe not taking the kids out of private school, but where would Annie be landing with you if you're like, I got a new adventure?
She's always down. I mean, I think she's so much less tethered to our life and comfort than I am. I mean, infinitely more free and willing. I don't know, man. I, you know, it's funny when I was looking at at y'all's questions, which I thought were so great, one thing that I kept finding myself thinking about is something that I think is, I've just randomly found myself thinking about even having y'all ask these questions, having on that piece of paper. But like, I think there's something to those of us, and I'm going to speak really for myself, but like men in Christendom, you know, I think so much about that Jeremiah verse where it's like, go into the land and settle and occupy it, you know, and I know that's, I don't want to take that too out of context, but we really skip this idea that the Lord would be like, hey, my job for you is just to do every day really well where you are. Like,
yeah.
And some days that's crazy boring. Mm-hmm. Some days it's unbelievably monotonous. And some, you know, you'll have weeks of the same day over and over and over, but that's where I have you. But just do that well. Just do that well. Because if everybody does that well, it's changes the world. It's just that I know me, I have this thing in me that's like, God, this is getting boring. Or like, this is not what I want. And I don't think that's the Lord. I think that's just my inability to trust and let go of control and to maintain little things.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that's
can
be dangerous to me, is that I just really over-exaggerate my importance or what my giftedness is. You know, and I think sometimes the best I can be is just to do every little thing in the day like I'm supposed to. And if I do those well, God's like, hey, you've done what I called you to do. Thank you. Like, go to bed and let's do it again tomorrow. And then every now and then he's like, hey, I got something crazy. And you're like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, oh, what is this? You know, but I think so much trouble I can get into is all of my own doing. It's just my inability to be still or to trust him in small things. And, you know, that I just feel like, you know, it's like if I spoke at a men's conference, I really think that's probably what I'd speak on. It's like, what do we do when we get bored? Like that to me, for Christian American men in our 40s, I'm like, that's the battle we all fight. I think, and I don't think we know we fight it because we call it other things. But I think like, you know, home life is really tricky. I mean, you know, with kids, because as a dude, that's not your kingdom. It's your wife's kingdom. You know, and your kingdom is your vocation and the things sort of outside of that. But it sucks coming home a lot of days because you're like, I was just in control of my work kingdom. Now I come home and I'm a servant in this other kingdom. And that's not really fun. I don't like how that makes me feel.
Yeah.
And so I go home later, or I have another work meeting that's not really a work meeting, or I just go home and when I know I'm not going to have to do those things, or, you know. And so I just think there's so much work we have to do. I speak for myself that God really has like got me in the crosshairs of just like, how do you maintain the little stuff well? What do you do when you get bored? What do you do when you look at your week and like, God, there's kind of nothing fun this week. It's like, God's like, ooh, can we have that conversation? Will you ask me that?
Yeah.
Like, would you invite me into that? I'd love to have that conversation with you. Cause that's where he starts to get really big in these really cool ways. But you know, I'll busy myself or I'll cheat things or whatever just to kind of not have to feel what life is sometimes, which is just this kind of bland bunch of days that don't really offer some reprieve, you know? And I think that's what I get interested in. I think that's what God is trying to help me with, is sort of like, what does that look like for me? How do I do that well? Because there's a stillness we get on the other side of that.
Right.
There's a real sense of being with the Lord that I think he loves to give us that I won't be still enough for, you know, and I won't be okay with how sort of boring and monotonous life can be, you know?
Yeah.
I think we are so prone to like the sports center ticker. Like, I don't even watch sports. I just watch the highlights.
Yeah.
But that it's become that sports center is life. And so if it's not the highlight reel, then it's the old video of AI, Allen Iverson going practice. Y'all talking about practice? Yeah. We talking about practice. And a lot of life is practice. It is the monotonous. It is showing up early. It is the things that don't feel like the best Christmas show of all times or the best writing room. It's just that very. It's not sexy. It's not fun. And I think it's meaningful. And discovering the meaning in it. Because I think for us, like I read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning every year. Mm. And I think men should read it yearly. But there is something in, it doesn't have to be like monumental to be meaningful. Yeah,
that's right. That's exactly right. That's beautifully said.
And
beautifully said.
When I can find meaning in the things that aren't monumental, and I've just had this epiphany with previous conversations we've had, and I thought through if I take my son on a trip, I took him to Teleco with a bunch of my friends and we went trout fishing this little creek and we came back and all he said was, that was so fun. That was so fun. Never once did he say, hey, what were you trying to impart in me? And what is this going to mean for our next season, Dad?
Mm, yeah.
It was like, no. That was the thing.
Mm.
It was meaningful in its existence.
Mm.
And I think for all of us and for people who are in their 20s, I can't imagine what it would be like if I could find that in my 20s.
Yeah.
This discovery of God, early on we see God as creator. He creates. Mm. Boom. Day one, two, three, creative. And he walks. He creates and then he walks. And the next time we see him walk, he's redeeming.
Mm.
And I think we spend a lot of our early part of our life, it's creation. It's the image of God in creating and conquest and all these things. And then we reach this other side where we're like, okay, now what's my redemptive work?
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And it's philanthropic, and it's benevolent. And it's saying, okay, I did the first 6 day thing.
Yeah.
Where I was creating and creating and it's good. And all my days weren't good, but his were. And that was good. And that was good. And that was good. Okay. Well, then it got wonky. And then now I'm like, okay, now that I'm 42, what am I doing? That's the redemptive work of God, not the creative work of God.
Yeah. Well, and the maintenance too, which is what you're saying. I think it's that, you know, it's caretaking. It's like, what does it look like with my family to take care of them and to maintain a family well, because like you just said so beautifully, like so much of my ministry to my kids is just to be with them, like physically and to be available to them, all those things. It's not these sort of poignant moments where you're like, let me impart some wisdom to you, son or daughter. It's just that, you know, I think they have a subconscious way of knowing how you feel about them by what it feels like for them to be with you and how much you are with them. And I think, you know, as they get older, is you know, with college age kids, but like that's when it changes to a much more kind of like communicative worth. Like, hey, Dad, how do I do this? Well, I'll tell you, hey, Dad, when you had that, what'd you do? I did this, you know, or like, hey, when you're dating that mom, how'd you know? I was like this. But for a long time, it's just like, you know, I love you because I'm with you and because our spirit is good. You feel that me being with you is good and peaceful and fun and it's laid back and I want to be with you and you can tell that. And so I think the maintenance of that in the season I know I'm in is like, it's like you said, it's not creative anymore, which is fine. It's just like, hey, just wake up and do the job well today and then get up and do the job well tomorrow. And I think it's not, like you said, it's not sexy. It's not this thing, but I think that ultimately what I'm trying to say is I think that God, with me at least, is like, I would love for me to be enough for you, whatever the moment feels like.
Yeah.
And I think on those days where it's just, I'm like, I can't find anything to look forward to, or it's just like, I can just feel the Lord going like, hey, will you invite me in and let me be a part of this so that you can feel my presence and my joy in you and my love for you and those things, even on days you're like, yeah, this is a bummer of a day, that I can go, you know what, the Lord, you're with me. I feel your pleasure in me. And that just, I feel myself breathe. Okay. It's going to be great. I'm where I'm supposed to be. And it's hard, but I do feel that the older I get, I can feel this sort of like twitchiness if I'm not careful.
Well, at 48 we started to get 50. Just being present for 2 or 3 years feels like a big risk.
Oh yeah.
I should be doing something.
Yeah.
I'm 48. I better do it. And just sitting and having meaningful moments, not doing something that's conquest, feels like a risk.
It Yeah. I mean, we just passed Father's Day and my wife is like, what are you doing for Father's Day? And like, I'm at this age, I don't want anything. Like, I have nothing I want. And I was like, I want some corn on the cob and grilled chicken. For real. And the kids that were home to be there. And so two of the five of them
were
there.
We are very different.
And yeah.
You and I are very different. Because my wife says, what do you want Father's Day? It's definitely things I can't say on this podcast.
Hey! Which, you know what?
I did not ask for corn on the cob. I promise you that.
Those are implied, Brian.
Hey, can I tell you, I want to do a stand-up bit on this, but it's too risky. Isn't it funny? It is not lost on me that you take a Father's Day and a dad. Everybody knows what dad wants. Mother's Day, on the other hand, is completely the opposite. Right. I want to go away. I want to be alone. I want to be nowhere near you or the kids. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, isn't it hysterical that for a man, he's like, there's one thing and it's very close. It involves being very close to you. And a woman, you're like, anything you want, Mother's Day. She's like, I want as far as I can be away from this family.
I want the thing that got us to fatherhood.
Yeah. Yeah, can I have a spa with a stranger that won't speak to me for an hour and a half?
I want strangers to touch me, just not you.
Speak English.
I want a man to touch me, just not you to touch me.
I want you to pay him.
Father's Day.
I want you to pay a man to touch me. That's what I want.
This is so sideways. For those that might still be listening.
Back to corn on the cob with you.
Still be listening at this point. But I just wanted, what I wanted was just my kids to be present, right?
Yeah.
That was gift enough, and it's something I had to process and go like, if that's what I want, is that not at maybe this stage what God wants for us? Just His kids to be present.
Yeah,
and I think I've been doing for God for a long time, serving His kingdom, and I think maybe He's going, maybe I should do more sitting than serving at this point.
Mm.
We had the Mary and Martha conversation a couple weeks ago with somebody else, and I don't know that there's anything wrong with being Martha and serving, but I think sometimes there's a reminder that maybe in some seasons we got to sit sometimes.
Well, it's and I think y'all had a question somewhere around this that I found myself thinking about, but like we really have to divorce ourselves from this notion that God needs us to do anything.
Yeah,
I mean that's what a colossal piece of theology that is that like. You know, I need that God is like, if you don't do this thing for me, it's all going to fall apart. But instead, what He really wants is to be with me. And whatever comes from that, I'll probably know what to do because I will have been with Him. And I know what He wants from me. But I think, you know, I get that backwards and I do all the stuff. And I'm like, hey, just checking in. We good? And He's like, hey, can we get him in? And I'm like, sorry, I got to go do some more stuff kind of for both you and I. And He's like, okay, well, see ya. And I think the kingdom vision to me as I get older is so important because it really is this idea of like, I just have such a, I mean, it's humorous, but I just have this feeling that we're going to get to heaven. And these things that we were really like, man, I just crushed it for JC on these couple things. And he's like, dude, those were great. So you know what I really loved is that, remember that afternoon you and your daughter sat on the front porch and like chit-chatted for 30 minutes? And you're like, yeah, he's like, that's a big one. Like, way to go. And you're like, really? He's like, yeah, like you were just available and kind. And that was a ministry to your daughter. Yeah. It developed her brain in some frontal lobe ways. And you're like, what? Yeah, but what about when I went? And he's like, that was good. That was great. You know, the other thing I love, remember that drive with your son to his baseball game that one time we all laughed really hard? Like, that was him. And you're like, I just feel like I know I get a lot of that wrong. And I think to y'all's point, so much more of it is about being than it is the doing, you know, especially like you said, as I get older.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if abstractly we thought about heaven and the currency is like kindness. Right. And so like you're making deposits in just kindness.
Yeah.
Right. The lady who accidentally pulled out in front of you in the parking lot and looks at you terribly and you're like, oh, you're good. You know, instead of like the other options.
With your hand.
The other waves.
Yeah. The other waves. Instead of, oh, you're good. This lady.
The other way.
This lady at Home Depot hugged me. I hug people. I didn't know her.
That's an interesting start to the story.
But she hugged me. I go to the register and like I'm going to pay with cash, which is weird anyways. And so I have cash and I'm checking out and the little cash machine doesn't work. And it lights up and the associate is on their way, right? So this lady comes, elderly lady. She's there working. And she's like, oh, I can fix this. And so she does something on screen. It doesn't work. She's like, oh, I'll fix it. Hold on. And it still doesn't work. She does something and it doesn't work. And I was like, listen, it's okay. It's no big deal. Like, I'm not even in a hurry. Like, I'm relaxed. She's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And she tries something else. She says, I'm going to have to call somebody. And she gets on a radio and it doesn't work. And I said, I can wait.
Yeah.
Or I can check out somewhere else. She goes, oh my gosh, thank you for being so nice. And this lady hugs me. And I understand the assignment, right? Because I hug people. And so, like, that lady hugged the right dude that day. Because I hugged grandma right back, just tight. And I thought, I don't know if I hope he was watching me play guitar the other day at church. But, like, I hope the Lord saw that.
Yeah.
Like, I hope he was watching on that one.
Yeah.
Because that one felt like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if the currency of heaven could be kindness more than it is the credibility of who will write the foreword for your book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So.
That was a sermon there.
Yeah, well, it's like an offering there.
Okay, random question. The next phase of Dave, any chance you would like pastor a church?
His dad's a pastor, or was a pastor, right?
Yeah, it's in there, man. It's in the bones. It's deep in the DNA.
Yeah.
I would
totally come to your church.
No, what would need to happen to me is just like, let me every now and then kind of pop in and say something and then pop right back out.
That's pastoring. You didn't know? Does that not what you're that nowadays, bro? That's,
oh, you mean mega church.
Yeah. That's just
You're saying that's mega church pastoring.
That's tracks. What pastoring is now. You just pop in, say a few things.
No, you know. I do. You know, me and my best friend teach a Sunday school together, and it scratches so many itches for me on sort of that pastoral stuff. And I'm an elder in my church, so that also does that. But there was a world where I thought I was going to do that before I got into music. I really thought I was going to probably go to seminary and do that whole thing. But God, I would be such a bad pastor. I would be such a bad pastor. My intent would be wonderful, and my crowd work would be off the charts. But my stick-to-itiveness and or sort of like, so pastor, where are we in phase two? I'm like, ooh, man, I was phase one was great. We're doing a phase two. They're like, there's seven phases. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, somebody take me out back and shoot me.
Yeah.
But the adventure and ideas would be like, I've got a new idea.
Now, that said, I know we're phase two here. What I have a phase one of another thing.
Yeah.
Can
yeah.
I share that with y'all?
So what if it was, and you mentioned this earlier, this sort of caring for young artists in A&R or whatever. What if pastoring looked like caring for young artists? Caring for
that's what it's always been for me. I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's always been a big part of my heart in Nashville, and I spend a lot of time doing that. So it kind of comes out in that way in my vocation.
You ever tell somebody that, though? You ever look at somebody and say, listen, I don't know where you're on your faith journey, and I'm not your pastor, but if you ever find yourself in a hospital room or something and you need a pastor, I will be that for you. You ever just told them?
No.
Tell them, bro.
Tell him. Just tell him, Dave.
Just tell him, Dave. Hey,
sorry.
You.
I'm sorry about Brian to the party.
I'm not.
No.
I'm not like, but I'm just, for you, you can call me Pastor Dave.
Yeah. Pastor Dave, Brother Barnes.
I'm not taking up an offering.
I hope people know, my really close friends, my younger friends, I think they know that. And they've done that, which means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I can start carrying a card or something. You know, said Brother Barnes.
Like a spam,
it's a secret number.
A spam social media account. Like a spam account.
Pastor Dave Barnes.
Pastor Dave.
I'm just saying, if it comes up and you get friend requested from Pastor Dave Barnes, I'm not
It's you. It's not you.
And I'm going to AI you preaching sermons.
Or AI that song I gave y'all like a bad chorus for, that Christmas song.
Oh, for sure.
That's my first single.
Yeah, they'll be like, his voice sounds a lot like Stephen Furtick on these, but it's his head. I don't know what it is.
He sounds like Philip Anthony Mitchell.
Yeah.
Oh,
my gosh. Sounds like. Yeah. And I'm like, no. It's definitely him.
It's nothing like that.
Yeah.
Nothing like that.
Yeah. So we have a mutual friend, I think. I think he's your friend. You were on his podcast.
He shouted
a couple
out.
Times.
He got shouted out.
He did.
The latest episode, yeah.
Yeah. Who did? No, I'm confused.
Dave Barnes did. The last Dave episode.
Dave Barnes shouted him out.
No. No, on the last episode of the Great Song Podcast.
Okay, so Rob Alley.
Oh, of course y'all know Rob. Yeah, from Lee, right?
Yeah, well, I lived at his house for ages. Like, they're like family to me.
Oh, I love him. Yeah. We text, he and I and JP Mosier text about every day.
Rob is the best guy.
We have a music text thread, and it is, you've never in your life read more nerdy things texted by grown men than what is on that.
So I introduce Rob to you.
So I owe you.
So I was like, yeah. Because Rob knew all these obscure people. Monty Montgomery. I'd never heard of that.
Oh,
dude.
Man.
Like, just
Monty Montgomery.
Right? I heard him live in Lexington, Kentucky.
Throwback.
Yeah. So Monty Montgomery. There's all these different people I'd never heard of. And so, like, the only one I could offer was, there's a guy named Dave Barnes that I know. And he's like, who? And now.
Hang on. Which, you knew Dave when? Like, early Dave? Like,
yeah, I guess.
Oh, that would have been really early. Yeah,
it was. Because Rob's known him for ages. So this would have been, early years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I love those guys.
Great guys.
Yeah, no, the I was listening to them today, actually, the latest episode of the Great Song Podcast with, I think it's with Five for Fighting and Edwin McCain.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, and I think it was JP or somebody's like, my top three artists, and you got named in that list. And I was like, oh, I'm going to talk to that dude today. Dave getting the shout out.
You guys would laugh. I mean, literally, it is. So this is true story. What we texted about today, and this is kind of how these text strings go, is that somebody will be like, dude, I was listening to this song. You ever notice that there's a tambourine on the bridge, but that's the only place? Or like today, what the real conversation was, is JP was talking about having heard Baker Street. Or no, that's a Careless Whisper. Remember that saxophone? The huge song is called Baker Street. And this is how this text string goes. JP says, I heard Baker Street today, and that makes me ask the question, what are the other songs where the instrument hook is a bigger hit than the actual song? Or like that the instrument hook is known more. And so then, then it's all of a sudden and then I put like Careless Whisper, and it was like, oh, that's good. But I mean, that's, and then every now and then I'll be like, hey, how's life? And somebody will be like, oh, it's good. But mostly it's, do you like George Michael's second record or third record more? And it's like, that's a great question. Well, it's got these, it's whatever nerdery is going on.
Yeah. I haven't been doing podcasting like really long.
He's new to the game.
I haven't been doing, but here's what I'll say. There's a phrase that people throw around a lot, and early on it made me feel good. Now I realize it's not. And when people say, that's a really good question.
Oh, yeah.
At first I was like, man, I'm asking great.
You're killing it.
I'm killing it with these questions.
Yeah. Veterans like Dave and I know. And like, then, that's just a stall tactic.
I'm like, man, there's no way I'm batting 1,000. On these
you know what I've learned
I've
is actually what
really
you want to hear.
Dumb questions. See if people still do it.
Man, that's a really dumb question. the one that I think is John and I always laugh at that we love hearing is like, oh, nobody's ever asked me that before. I'm like, oh, that's good. And that can be bad too, but that feels a little more like you're kind of like, oh, okay, that feels a little more like maybe we did say something. Potentially.
Yeah, so like when I asked Dave Barnes boxers or briefs, he's like, nobody's ever asked me that before.
Wait, what a great question.
What a fantastic
I'm glad you asked me that.
I'm 100% sure probably him and John have had that conversation on Dadville.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Oh man. Yeah.
So speaking of Dadville, let's talk about that. You guys are several hundred episodes in now.
Yeah.
I think.
Couple hundred.
Has there been a favorite? Is there somebody you just love talking to on your show?
I know you're gonna roll your eyes when I say this, but it's true. There've been a lot. I mean, it's there's some stereotypical ones. I mean, having Matthew McConaughey on was really fun, obviously. Lee Ann Morgan is so freaking funny. I mean, you just laugh the entire time. And then there's, John Mark Comer, who I love. It's always fun. We just had Tyler Staten on. I feel like there's kind of like genres of enjoyment. So there's like the ones you laugh a lot. Then there's like usually music ones that I geek out because, it's Bruce Hornsby. And you're like, holy cow, we're talking to Bruce Hornsby. And then there's like kind of theological ones, you know, that I feel like are really poignant. So they kind of, yeah, they kind of, and then like just pure celebrity, just like, oh my gosh, this is cool, you know, that we have whoever on.
Yeah.
But you know, I will say it's funny you brought that up a second ago. One of my favorite moments on the podcast is we had, oh my gosh, Craig, what's his name, Today's Show, who's so great, Melvin. And it was kind of a two-part. At the end of the interview, he literally goes, man, this went a lot better than I thought it would. This was great. And we were like, because, you know, we were cutting up with him the whole time, so he felt like he could say that.
Yeah.
But me and John really took pride in that because we were like, okay, that's good. That's good. Like, he really enjoyed it. And then we saw him. We went over to interview Amy Grant at Amy's place, and he was there. And the door opened. He's like, my guys, I remember you guys. And we were like, so I think, you know, kind of your point about asking good questions, it's fun when you get done with people who I think do the rounds a lot and they really are like, wow, that was actually really, that was fun. That was like, you know, we talked about things that, you know, or it's just a good time. You know, people like laugh and have a good time.
On the previous show, I had the very fortunate opportunity to interview Annie, your friend Annie Downs. And she's fantastic. And so she's the queen of podcasting. Like I am, she is like it at podcasting. And so we get off and I'm like, Annie, like any notes, like tell me something, right? Because I may do okay, but like she's Annie Downs. Like she's like, no, this was great. And I was like, done. I will never do it again. I am through that Annie said we did it again. So.
Oh, yeah. I think you knocked your mic off. Oh, you're back. Okay. You're back.
So yeah, I was like, yeah, no, I'll quit now. Like Annie says, I did good.
Yeah, she's really, really, really good at what she does.
Yeah,
I mean it's no wonder why you know her. She's grown the empire like she has.
She has grown the empire.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Brian is growing in his understanding of podcasting. We're helping him develop along. So as a veteran podcaster, what tidbits of insight could you give our friend Brian here?
I don't know. You know, I feel like John and I are still, I'm not just saying this, I feel like John and I are still, about every 7 or 8 podcasts, we'll have like a recap and it'll be like, that didn't go as well as I thought it would. Or why was that not as great as we hoped it would be? And so, you know, it's kind of different with every guest. I mean, I know it sounds really stereotypical to say, but it really is so different with every guest because some guests, I feel like you can have conversations and that's one thing. Some you interview and that's a totally other thing. And then some are both. And then, you know, some take a total left turn that you don't see coming. So it's tricky, you know, it's like, I think a lot of it is just kind of being like knowing how to read where the conversation's going and where that person wants the conversation to go.
Yeah.
Sometimes what gets tricky with Dadville specifically is that I think some sign on thinking it's like just conversations about being a dad. And so those always end up being hysterical because they're kind of like, so are we going to talk about being a dad? And you're like, especially
like Leanne was on.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, this feels a little off brand. but yeah, I don't know. Even 200, whatever we are, 30 in, 20 in, I'm like, I still feel like I'm learning so much about, I mean, dumbest thing to say is there's just a really big difference between having a conversation and doing an interview.
For sure.
That is a really big difference. And so I think still learning how to do either one of those really well and like, and what the interviewer wants. Cause we've had some that I thought would be conversations and they didn't go great. And then we leaned back in the interview and it was awesome.
Right.
And then some, it turned into the most fun conversations because it was just, that's what that person you could feel wanted to do, you know, and not be. And then we've had some where, you know, it will go unnamed, but I remember interviewing one guy and he was obviously checking his email while we were doing the interview. And I just thought, this is not what I wanted to happen, you know? And then it's like, is that our fault or is it his fault? You know, then you get off and you're like, were we boring or were not good questions?
That's my bad.
Or,
Sorry. No, there's been some bookings like, clearly the person is like, when are we going to talk about my book?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like when we, like I'm, my publicist got me on here. When are we going to talk about my book? Don't ask me about anything else. Just the book. Let's get the book.
That is one thing that John and I really try to do is like, whatever you came on the podcast for, we really want to honor that.
Right.
So if it's like, you know, somebody's doing the rounds with something they're promoting, it's like, we really want to know that that's going to be talked about. And usually pretty early, so that they don't feel kind of like, God, we're getting to the end of an interview. We ain't even talked about the thing I'm trying to promote. Right. Which I think serves us really well, because then they feel honored and they have a chance to promote that. And then we can kind of go wherever we want after that. We kind of had to learn that a couple times. We're just like, let's get that thing way out front. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, they're kind of like, so anyway, you know, my book, it's funny you mentioned my family, my book, my family's in my book. And
yeah, I wrote three sentences thanking them at the beginning of my
book. That's right. That speaking of my book.
So I hold these two tensions. Simon Sinek said in an interview about asking good questions that if he hasn't already read someone's book before he interviews or does a podcast, he won't read it. Like, he won't skim it. He's like, if so, then I'm just filtering all my questions, not discovering. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well then, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. But then I also remember the Seinfeld interview where he's on Larry King. And so Larry King said, so your show went off air now. Did you guys get canceled? And he's like, canceled? Larry, are you kidding me? Larry, do you know who I am? Larry, did you do any prep work before this interview? Like, we went out on top. We were the greatest thing ever. You know, it's Jerry's gonna, he's like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Have you done this before? And I try to hold the tension of not being like completely ignorant of whoever I'm talking to, but also like not just deep diving.
You know, one thing that I will say to that, I this has happened a few times, and I think it's okay because I think it's part of the game, but like there have been a few times where I'm like, man, if I had prepped a little more, this could have been a lot. They'll say something during the interview. I'm like, what? Then I'm like, I have so much interest in that thing.
Yeah.
And we only have 10 more minutes, you know, where I'm like, and it hadn't happened a ton, but it's happened enough that I'm like, I need to make sure that I've sort of covered bases, because there's nothing. That's probably my least favorite feeling, is when you get done, you're like, man, I would have loved to have asked more questions about that, but I didn't even know that they did that, or they had written that book or whatever, you know.
Songwriting? Dave Barnes does songwriting? I would have
loved
to.
Wait, Paul, you were in a band called The Beatles? Man.
I
would have
you
asked
means.
You some questions. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have a solo career, too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, now, I'm arm ready and armed now.
So is that, I mean, I know your love for the Beatles. We talked about it last time, and the last album was very Beatles-esque. Is Paul McCartney, is that the premier guest if you could get it done?
Yeah, I think so. That'd probably be it. I mean, there's a, you know, I'd love, I mean, John and I have, Harry Connick is what I'm like, Will Ferrell, Martin Short. We have like 10 that we joke about all the time, but he would be, that'd be,
I feel like Ferrell might be the right time. He's pushing this new Netflix movie or show.
Yeah.
I don't know who you know, but man,
I know.
If you could
get
that, that'd be lights out.
Oh my gosh. That is one of those.
You put an E on your episode, but.
I know, which we've had to do quite a few times.
I didn't know that was an option. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Like, let's go.
Okay.
There's a box I
new feature unlocked.
There's a box I check or don't check, depending on who the guest was.
Yeah. I love that. This next episode is going to get spicy, man.
Yeah, you just do two interviews, have one of them be dirty and the other one not, but they're two. It's not one that you mute or not. You're just like, hey, let's do like the dirty interview and let's just do another one. It's not dirty.
Put that in the email sheet out.
Yeah.
Your preference. Would you like the dirty interview?
Yeah, we
or
can
the
do like a dirty thing. Or
will
we
you
can
log on and we're both just shirtless?
Yeah. What's up, girl?
Help us, Lord. Help us deliver us from
Zero. Oh, yeah. Man.
So, Dad, the plan is the plan for you and John to continue Dadville. Is that a long term desire? For
yeah,
you
I mean,
guys?
we don't really have any expiration date on it. Yeah. We're just kind of enjoying it, and I mean, it's so, we really really enjoy it, and so I think as long as we're both feeling like we do about it, we'll keep doing it, you know.
So curiosity, because you guys have been friends a long time, live across the street from each other, right? Is that mm-hmm. accurate? Mm-hmm. So how has working together affected that relationship? Has it helped it, or is there times
a lot?
Like,
no, it helped a lot, because I mean, you guys know, it's like with kids, you just don't see people as much,
right?
And so I think it keeps us in really close contact, which I'm really thankful for, because I think otherwise, you know, you're off in kid land, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really helped.
I mean, so for us, there's been some conversations really early in the show that Brian says something and I was like, what? I didn't know that. Has there been a moment with you and John that like came up and you're like, even in all these years of friendship, somebody says something? And
oh,
like,
yeah.
What? Never
yeah,
knew.
I feel like that's almost once a month at least he'll say something like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, and you're trying to decide, is he a liar? is he
are
lying
you real
right
John?
Now?
Yeah, are you the real John?
Have you been taken over, your body taken
by
over?
Aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are hot takes we shouldn't go on.
Nah, for sure. Because I got a mother-in-law who for sure believes in that stuff. But she ain't listening, so I can...
Yeah.
One of our four listeners is not Pam.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
okay. Right. Nah. Awesome.
Nah, because we're not talking about flat Earth.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, I'm just kidding.
This is not the dirty...
this is not.
No ease on this one, so...
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, we do want to honor your time. We got a couple questions we want to finish up with, Dave, as always. I know you got busy 12 South things to do, like go to Frothy Monkey and Draper James or something. I don't know. So,
yeah.
Brian, why don't you?
Yeah, for sure. If you were going to try to encourage someone to be willing to take the risk to do something and fear and insecurities, all these reasons why we don't do stuff. And it could be something creative, like write the songs or write a book, or it could be start the small group or start a business. But just that thing that keeps people on the couch from actually getting out there. What would you say to encourage people to try? Because you've obviously tried a bunch of stuff over the years. Yeah. And a bunch of it's worked really well.
Man, that's a good question.
Thank you. Thank you for
man, that's
saying
I've never
that
been
to
asked
me.
That question. When I say that, I really do mean it.
Good.
I think on the other side, this is something I'm having to learn. So I say this as someone that would join that group and how they feel. I think some of the most fascinating things are on the other side of fear, you know, like, and so I think sometimes it's not even about doing that thing. I can't believe I'm saying this. I feel like the Lord is looking at me as I say this and he's going, go, keep going. Listen to what you're saying. But I think sometimes it's not even about that dream that you're like, I'm too scared to do it. I think it's just about getting on the other side of that fear. Mm-hmm. If the dream works or not, it's just going, oh, that thing can't control me. It's not the end all be all. Yeah. And so I think that's as much fun sometimes as having that dream work is just knowing like, man, it didn't work, but I'm just not as scared as I was before I did it. And I think that's as valuable as the dream sometimes is. It's just conquering that thing and knowing now you don't have to be scared of it anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's a great answer. And so we see Nobody's is a good thing around here. I know the title, A Couple of Nobody's, is not the most charming title sometimes, but...
But it's accurate.
It is accurate.
Because Dave spent an afternoon with a couple of nobodies.
A couple of nobodies.
We're the nobodies.
We are.
Let me introduce you to Dave Barnes.
Yeah. So we see it as good things because we are the nobodies. But who's a nobody in your life who you think the world should know about?
I mean, my wife. I mean, 100,000%. I don't know anybody better than Annie Barnes. Like, she's the best. She is, man, what an amazing human being she is. She is, she's just the best. I don't know anybody like her. And I think she likes the shadows. She is fine. She's like, yo, enjoy that stuff. I'm going to be productive and helpful while you're like preening about the stage. But yeah, I mean, she is, I'm really in awe of her and her love for people and our family, and she's just awesome. She's awesome. And she, like I said, she would so much rather be able to move in her life as she does than ever having to have any kind of weird limelight or spotlight or anything.
Awesome. And he sounds like a great human being.
She is.
Awesome. Dave,
once she gets out of jail, it's going to be such a celebration.
She is such a great Homo sapien.
Yeah, she
is. Such a great human being.
Yeah,
she is.
Like, if being a human being is the bar, she exceeded
it. She is. She bees it well. She bees it really well.
Bees it, yeah. Awesome. Well, Dave, it is an absolute honor. I thank you again for coming on this show and being on the last show and just making us laugh. You're one of the funniest dude I get to hang out with.
Well, that's kind.
You are. Seriously, I mean that. And just really enjoyed it. And as we say here at A Couple of Nobodies, you don't ever have to try to be somebody.
Mm, amen to that.
Thanks, buddy.
Besides, you need to be Dave Barnes.
Yeah, be Dave Barnes.
Well, I do. I wouldn't say y'all would. There's not enough room for that.